Chapter 3. Bill Bannister looked at Lord Tidmouth. He looked appealingly, as a young soldier in a tight place might have looked at Napoleon. Lord Tidmouth returned the gaze with a reassuring nod and a leave-it-to-me wave of the hand. "I'm ready," said Lottie. Lord Tidmouth eyed her owlishly. "Ready for what, old thing?" "To dance." "With Bill?" "With Bill." Tact gleamed from Lord Tidmouth's monocle. "Bill isn't going to dance." "But he said he would." "He's made up his mind to stay in." "Well, I've made up my face to go out." "Shall I tell you something, Lottie?" said Lord Tidmouth. "Go ahead." "Bill's never going to dance with you again. Never, never again. He's going home, back to Happy Hampshire." A dangerous gleam appeared in Lottie's beautiful but formidable eyes. She directed it at her shrinking playmate. "Is this true, Bill?" Bill Bannister yesed in a small voice. It was not for him to question the methods of a master of tact like Tidmouth, but he could not restrain a feeling that the news might have been broken a little more gently. "You see," said Bill, "I simply must go home. There's the estate to look after, and, well, that's all there is to it. I think it's time I went home." "A 1,000 pigs are pining for him," said Lord Tidmouth. "Let me get this straight," said Lottie in a strange, tense voice, not unlike that of a tigress from whom some practical joker is endeavouring to steal the daily ration of meat. "Are you leaving me flat?" Lord Tidmouth was delighted at his former helpmate's ready intelligence. Of all his wives, he reflected, Lottie had always been quickest at the uptake. "That's right," he said. "You've put the thing in a nutshell. It's all off, and so is he." Ignoring a sharp, whistling, sighing noise which proceeded from the lips which had once promised to love, honour, and obey him, he resumed his discourse. "You see, Bill's a country gentleman, old girl. Lives in the wilds, half a dozen miles from anywhere, and he doesn't think you would quite fit into the picture." "Oh, I'm not fit to associate with his beastly vicars and ploughboys, eh?" asked Lottie, with ominous calm. "He doesn't say that," urged Lord Tidmouth. "What he means is that you wouldn't be happy in a small village. He's doing you a kindness, really. Why, dash it, if you got fed up with me in the middle of London, how much fedder up you would be in a place like Woolham, Chersey, with a bird like Bill? Good heavens, there's nothing offensive in the man's attitude. He admires and respects you, but he feels that Woolham, Chersey is not for you. Lots of the world's most wonderful women would be out of place in Woolham, Chersey. Queen Elizabeth, Catherine of Russia, Cleopatra, dozens of them." He paused with the complacency of an orator who is conscious of having struck the right note. "Besides," said Bill, who was not so sure that his collaborator was putting this thing across as well as he thought he was, "if I can't come in without finding you kissing..." "Oh, boy," murmured Lord Tidmouth reproachfully. "Bygones be bygones. Let the dead past bury its dead." Lottie sniffed. "So that's the trouble. You know as well as I do that Squiffy means nothing to me any longer. There's no need for you to be jealous." "I'm not jealous." "Oh," said Lottie sharply. "And why aren't you, may I ask? I see it all now. There's somebody else." "No, no," said Lord Tidmouth. "Quite wrong. Absolutely not so. There is some woman who is stealing him away from me." Her voice rose. "Who is she? What's her name? Tell me her name. Who is she?" She rested her hands on her hips, and from beneath lowering eyebrows glared militantly. Her manner interested Lord Tidmouth and caused him to advance a theory to explain it. "I say, Lottie, old girl," asked his lordship, "have you any Spanish blood in you?" "Now listen, Lottie," this from Bill, who was not enjoying the glare. "I won't listen." "My second wife was half Spanish," proceeded Lord Tidmouth chattily. "How well I remember. Shut up." "Oh, rather," said his lordship. "I merely spoke." Lottie turned to Bill again. "So," she said, "you want to get rid of me, do you? You want to throw me aside like a... Worn-out glove? Prompted Lord Tidmouth. Like a worn-out glove. You think you're going to abandon me like an old tube of toothpaste? Shut up. Oh, rather. Lottie's eyes flashed. Let me tell you, you're mistaken if you think you can get rid of me so easily. Lottie, said Bill, please. Lottie, please, said Lord Tidmouth. Lottie, please, Lottie, please, Lottie, please, cried the injured woman in the tones which had intimidated 100 theatrical dressing rooms, and which, when heard during the course of their brief married life by the late Mr. Higginbottom, had always been enough to send that pusillanimous cotton magnate shooting off to his club for refuge. She ran to the tea table and snatched up a cup. There! She hurled the cup down with a crash. Did you ring, sir? It was a bellboy who spoke. He had appeared in the doorway with a smooth promptness which spoke well for the efficiency of the service at the Superba. This was due partly to long training, and partly to the fact that for some moments back he had been standing with his ear glued to the keyhole. And there! Cried Lottie, demolishing a second cup. This one produced Marie. Did you call, madam? And there! Said Lottie. And there, and there! Another cup, a slop basin, and the teapot joined the ruins on the floor. Lottie, said Bill urgently, pull yourself together. Absolutely, agreed Lord Tidmouth. Cups cost money, what? A piercing scream from the sufferer nearly broke the remaining cup on the table. Marie, advancing solicitously, was just in time to catch her employer as she fell. There was general consternation. All those present were disturbed and distressed, except the bellboy, who had not had such an enjoyable time since the day, 6 months ago, when the couple in Suite 10 had settled a lover's tiff in his presence with chairs, the leg of a table, and a series of small china ornaments from the mantelpiece. As always on occasions such as this, the air became full of a babble of words. Water, cried Marie. Vinegar, recommended the bellboy. Eau de cologne, said Bill. Pepper, said Lord Tidmouth. Marie had another suggestion. Give her air. So had the bellboy. Slap her hands. Lord Tidmouth went further. Sit on her head, he advised. The clamour was affecting Bill Bannister's nervous system. Will you be quiet, he roared. The noise subsided. Now then, said Bill, taking command. He turned to the bellboy. Go for a doctor. Yes, sir. And you, continued Bill, addressing Marie, take her into the bedroom. Yes, sir. The mob scene diminished. Bill, mopping his forehead, was aware of his old friend Lord Tidmouth hovering to and fro. He eyed him sourly. What are you hanging about for? He demanded. Lord Tidmouth reflected. Well, honestly, old chap, I don't quite know. Just lending sympathy and moral support, as it were. Get a doctor. But the boy is getting one. Well, get another. Get a dozen. Lord Tidmouth patted Bill's shoulder with infinite gentleness and understanding. I know just how you're feeling, old boy, he said. You've never seen Lottie in quite this frame of mind before, and you find it upsetting. To me, of course, all this is old stuff. How well I remember, said Lord Tidmouth, beginning to dictate his autobiography, how clearly it all comes back, that second week of our honeymoon, when, in a spirit of kindly criticism, I told her that her new hat looked like nothing on earth. People talk about the San Francisco earthquake. Get out! Just as you say, old boy. And don't come back without a doctor. I won't, Lord Tidmouth assured him. I'll get one if I have to rob a hospital. For the moment, then, laddie, tinkety-tonk. The room now empty, Bill felt more composed. He called sharply to Marie, who popped out of the bedroom like a cuckoo from a clock. Marie!
Sir?
How is she?
Still unconscious, sir. And I don't like her breathing. If you ask me, it's stertorous.
Stertorous?
Sort of puffy. Like this.
Taking in a supply of air, Marie emitted it in a series of moaning gasps. It was not an inartistic performance, but Bill did not like it. Marie.
Sir?
When I want any farmyard imitations, I'll ask for them.
Very good, sir.
Hurt by destructive criticism, the maid withdrew into the bedroom. The door had scarcely closed behind her when the bellboy appeared.
He had the unmistakable look of a bellboy who is about to deliver the goods.
"The doctor, sir,"
he announced with modest pride. Bill heaved a relieved sigh.
"Send him in," he said.
And having said it, he stood gaping. Framed in the doorway was a young and becomingly dressed girl. She carried a small black bag, and at the sight of her, Bill Bannister's eyes widened to an incredulous stare, and his jaw drooped like a lily. Then there swept over him so tumultuous a rush of ecstasy that his vocal cords seemed tangled in a knot. He swallowed convulsively, and realized despairingly that speech, for the moment, was entirely beyond him.